What's up, Shooters Radio Universe? Nick McCone here, once again, the Straight Shooters Podcast. And once again, we're bringing you a classic episode, our In Your House, It's Time deep dive from December 1996. We will bring you the In Your House DX December 1997 deep dive later this week, but we were supposed to last week, and because we couldn't, we're bringing you these two classic episodes for you. We uploaded the December 1995 In Your House Seasons Beatings last week. So here is It's Time, our In Your House December 1996 deep dive.
You ready to deep dive? Dive deep into It's Time
from 1996? It's time!
Oh, it's time.
That's a yes.
I stopped it. Yeah. I can't, like, because Vader's not there, so all I can use is...
It's time!
That's about it.
And that's it. That's technically the name of the show.
Yeah.
We're not implying that
I still
that
don't
Vader...
understand why they can't just change it. Oh, my God, 3 months in advance, you already have it set, but things change. Like, okay, well, I mean, just send
promotional
out
materials
stuff,
are out there,
man.
Like...
We're a multi-billion dollar company, maybe multi-million at that time, but
probably
you
a
still
easier
do
said
it.
Than
I always thought it was stupid.
Easier said than done when you got like promotional materials, and they got their commercials ready, and you know.
You know, it's not like you're changing the sponsor. Karate Fighters was like sponsoring everything back then.
They were. They're trying to get people to. We gotta get some Karate Fighters. I gotta get some Karate Fighters. I'm sure they exist on the internet out there, and I'm sure I don't know how much they cost. I'm gonna look them up in a second, actually, but I'm sure that you can buy them something from somebody out there. Some Karate Fighters,
thousands of dollars.
Well, let me look them up real quick before we get into this.
You want me to play the intro?
Sure, why not?
While I do that, let's hit it.
For the longest time, I've thought about one thing: being the World Wrestling Federation champion. Again and again and again. Sure, Psycho Sid is 6'9", but I can promise you one thing. You will be excellently executed by the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. If I want one thing, I want that title. You're standing in my way.
Let's say I don't care!
Because I am the man.
And now, Milton Bradley Karate Fighters presents WWF In Your House. It's time.
Man, that was dramatic.
Time!
Sorry, I'm probably going to annoy you with that today, so...
Yeah.
You've already felt it. We're 13 minutes in, 14 minutes in, and that's it. You've had it.
It is what it is. I expected it. After the first time you played it, I was like, oh, well, this is going to be the episode. This is how it's going to be. Every time I say it, I'm going to get played. That's just how it's going to be here on episode 311. But... I'm about to say it again, actually.
Don't worry. I don't want to make you like hesitant to say it, so I will try to I'll try to control myself.
In Your House, It's Time.
All right, that's it.
Was brought to us by the World Wrestling Federation on December 15th, 1996. It emanated from the West Palm Beach Auditorium in West Palm Beach, Florida. The building is now known as the West Palm Beach Christian Convention Center. It's like a convention center for like Jehovah's Witnesses now.
About that.
I don't know if you knew that.
No, so, I did not.
But back then, it was just a normal building. Mm-hmm. The building was built in 1965. It is the former home of the Florida Bobcats of the Arena Football League. Of course, I knew that.
You did.
The Florida Hammerheads of a roller hockey league. I don't know which one that was. And the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. That was an indoor soccer team. So a lot of wild stuff happening at the West Palm Beach Auditorium, now known as the West Palm Beach Christian Convention Center. So there you go.
Nothing says, December pay-per-view like West Palm Beach, Florida.
I mean, that's where I'd like to be in December, though. I mean, at least like I like that weather. You know, it's not a bad place to be. I'm gonna think of it. I think they WWF tries to do pay-per-views in like warm climates in December. Maybe I'm wrong about
the
that.
The previous one we did was in the right here in our backyard, Hershey Park, Pennsylvania. So
that's true.
I don't know what they thought about this year.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Hershey Park, Pennsylvania. It ain't warm out there in Hershey Park.
Even had to put the snow on the in your house logo to make sure we knew it was cold.
Right. Yeah, you knew. Even though everybody knows. Yeah. But, you know, just in case you didn't.
The snowballs against the, you know, throwing right, the snowballs the against the door.
The tagline for the show was super catchy. I don't know if you knew the tagline, but it's called Sharpshooter versus Powerbomb.
Like, you can't get better than that. And
I mean, that's just right the
poster.
On the nose.
Did you check out the poster? You got Bret Hart giving the sharpshooter to Ric Flair when he won the title, his first WWF title, and then Sid powerbombing Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, that's legit.
Is that Bradshaw's first pay-per-view poster? Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Powerbombed by Sid?
I would put money on it.
I'd put money on it as well, and he probably didn't appear in a whole lot more.
No, not anymore until 2004.
Until he was JBL.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't recall the APA getting on a bunch of pay-per-view posters. Maybe as like a compilation.
Right. Yeah.
But not like them themselves being featured. But I know for one, he was definitely on the cover of, well, I can't remember which one it was, but it's hit like his face. He's like smiling, like a political like ad.
Yeah.
I forget what show that was that he was in the poster for, but that, you know, it might have been other ones he was in the poster for. Mm-hmm. So congrats to Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
How about that?
Poster, pay-per-view poster debut. Getting flung through the air by Psycho Sid.
Yeah, he's not even all the way up. He's just like still going up, and not a flattering photo for him at all.
I mean, there's not too many ways you can look flattering while you're getting driven into the ground by a 6'9" man. But on the call for the show is Vince McMahon, Jerry the King Lawler, and Jim Ross. I almost forget that they just called him good old JR for like a year. They didn't call him Jim Ross, I don't think. It's just like, good old JR, and that's it. But that's his name.
Yeah, that's it.
Good old JR. And the opening match for In Your House, It's Time is a one-on-one contest between Leaf Cassidy and Flash Funk.
Oh! Oh! Firewood.
I know, that's right.
Oh my God, Vince McMahon. Just say you're white without saying white.
As soon as I heard that, I was like, wait a second. Now, we do deep dives almost every week on here, and I was like, I know he said that before. And so I knew it was at Survivor Series, but I didn't realize it was during Flash Funk's entrance. So he was literally trying to make this a thing with Flash Funk because, no one even said it. Like, I know that's right. Like, what's right, Vince? Like, what are you trying to do here?
Exactly. That's a, like, I know that's right. That's a thing that black people do say. I know that's right. Well, that's a for sure right on, something like that. Like, but, like, when you agree with something that somebody did, you know, I know that's right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a thing that people say, but, like, out of context, like here with Vince McMahon, it's just like white people again. Like, and he says in this boisterous, gravelly, I know that's right. So it's like that's the catchphrase we came up with for Flash Funk. Somebody must have told Vince, like, hey, this is something that black people that might connect with black people. Maybe Tuco Scorpio himself said that, like, hey, this could be my catchphrase, or some white person, let's say this,
yeah, okay, probably.
Like, Vince saw that in his mind. That's going to be on t-shirts. That's going to be on signs. Maybe even people were going to be chanting it from the crowd. I know that's right. I know that's right. Like,
clap, 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 clap.
Right. I know that's right. Like, that's what Vince had in his mind.
Absolutely.
Look, here's the thing. Vince tried to, failed miserably, but he tried to put some, he tried to push Scorpio, right? He gave him the big entrance. He gave him the pyro. But much like a lot of things, he was the shiny new toy that he got tired of. And I'm sure over time, the girls went away. The pyro went away. He probably didn't even get an entrance by the time he got released. He was just like, there's Flash Funk, y'all. He didn't have a coat. He didn't have a hat. You know what I'm saying? Like that, we've seen that dozens of times, right? With Del Rio, it was the pyro, then the car, then he lost Ricardo Rodriguez. Then it was one thing after another that kind of shipped away. I'm sure that happened to Flash Funk. And the effort was there in the beginning, though. The problem was Flash Funk looked like something out of the 1970s in 1996. By 1996 standards, the way Flash Funk looked was outdated, bro. He looked like a pimp in the 70s.
He did. He did.
Like, my girl saw it. I was watching this. My girl saw this. And was like, oh, he's a pimp with hoes. I'm like, no, babe, that's Godfather. He's a pimp with hoes. Flash Funk is just, he's all about positivity and having a good time. Like,
it's funny. It's funny you mentioned that, because when The Godfather first came on the scene with, you know, the pimp character, I was like, this guy, like, the motif looks familiar, like the hat and everything. And the only thing Flash Funk didn't have, or the only thing Godfather didn't have, was the big coat. But he did, like, eventually have that down the road. But like, Flash Funk didn't have the cane, I guess. Like, that was the difference. That I was just like, these presentations look similar to me, and I didn't even know anything about pimping or anything like that back then. I was just like, what? Like, what is going on? Like, what is this character? Didn't know, like, pimping, like, I had no clue what that was. I really did. I know, like, hearing me say it's funny, right? Like,
it is.
I mean, I'm putting the G on the end. Pimping.
Pimping is not easy, as I've heard.
No contractions allowed. Pimping is not easy.
Pimping is not easy. It's just, this is what Vince McMahon thought black people dressed like in 1996. That's pretty much it. It's like, all right, we got a black guy. He's pretty exciting. He's got some flashy moves. He's got some charisma. Put a hat with a brim on it, you know, fedora. Give him a fur coat. Give him those knee-high boots that look like something a stripper would wear.
Yeah.
Give him the flashy suit. I don't know what you unitard for him that he was wearing. I don't know what you would call it. Give him some girls. He can dance too. Oh man, a black guy that can dance and he dresses kind of flashy. Put his ass on TV today. And we're going to push him. I don't blame Scorpio for taking the job and trying to get paid. You got to get your money. All right? Do what you got to do. And this is like the only job that black people was getting in wrestling probably back in the, and what we know back in the day. So I don't blame Scorpio. It is what it is. But he had bills to pay. But it's just like, come on. Like, this is the representation of black people to Vince McMahon in 1996. Again, even by 1996, he looked outdated. That's not how we dressed in 1996. That's not how we dress today. Like, maybe the hat, but the coat that didn't go past his ribs. Come on now, the boots.
Yeah, those.
What were those?
I didn't like them to begin with, and I mean, my favorite. I will say, when WWF went to Jax Pacific for their new action figures and like with the bone crunching action, Flash Funk was my favorite action figure. They did go all out for his action figure, so I'll give him that.
Two for Scorpio. Let's give him his flowers. He's dope. Like, he was ahead of his time.
Very much.
Forgot his size. He'd be doing 450 splashes and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, he was amazing.
Like, you just talked about his size. I didn't realize how like big he was compared to Al Snow. Even like I was watching this match and saw Leaf Cassidy pick him up and body slam him, and it was just like he almost was like struggling because, you know, Scorpio was so big, not fat, but just like big frame and everything. Muscular, I just didn't realize it. I just didn't realize it back then.
Right, he was definitely very built up, but could still move. He was kind of, like I said, he's definitely ahead of his time. I'm sure he inspired some wrestlers out there who are wrestling today who watched him during his prime. But again, I don't blame him, even though just him being him was dope. Like, who didn't like Tuco Scorpio? He was dope. He didn't need a gimmick, but this is WWF, and especially in the 90s. Vince McMahon's like, how can I make this something that isn't necessary? Like, how can I do something?
That's exactly what he says.
You know what I'm saying? Because he's that's what he has to do. Instead of seeing Steve Austin, he's like, Ringmaster. You saw Mark Calloway. It was like, Undertaker. That one worked.
Yeah, kind of surprising in a way.
He saw Glenn Jacobs and said, Dentist. Like, before that, Diesel. Then Dentist. Or was it Diesel? No,
it was Dentist, the then first Diesel. And then Diesel. And...
Right. Yeah. So, again, he saw Glenn Jacobs. Dentist, like he just Glenn Jacobs is 6'10",
and we gotta make sure that dentist has terrible teeth,
right? Because it's a joke, right? He's a dentist with bad teeth. Come on, that's just writes itself. Like, this is how Vince McMahon, at least his mind worked, especially back then. It still kind of works that way today.
Oh, yeah.
You see, when God gets to the main roster, Keith Lee all of a sudden became Bearcat Lee. It's like, what? He was wearing a loincloth all of a sudden. It's like, what the hell? Yeah. He was in NXT. He was shirtless and he was limitless. Keith Lee. Limitless, meaning that despite his size, he could do whatever that needs to be done to win matches. He could do moonsaults. He could do power stuff. He has no limits. And he was running around shirtless and people wasn't going around like, ugh, look at this big old slob here. They was like, oh man, this dude can go, right? Because nobody cares about that type of stuff pretty much, right? Especially when you look at his stature. It isn't like he's short. He was like 6'3", 6'4". Come on now. Clearly an athletic guy. But no. Bearcat. What? Then released. Like, that's what they do. You know, Karrion Kross, they made him look like the fourth member of Demolition out there. Like, instead of just being Karrion Kross with his hot wife and having
didn't even interest, bring her up. Not once, so.
Didn't even bring her up. No, we got to do something. Give him a helmet and some S&M and some leather.
Make sure it makes an X around his body.
He's the son of Axe. the son of Smash. Somebody. Somebody in Demolition. We're going to tell that story at some point. This is just how Vince McMahon's mind works for some reason. It doesn't make any sense. The funny thing is, here in WWF, we got Leaf Cassidy and Flash Funk, right? Opening a show in WWF 1996. Al Snow versus Two Cold Scorpio would have been so much better. This match could have played out exactly the same, but because it was Al Snow and Two Cold Scorpio, that match is
these
dope.
Characters, man. Well, it's just, the characters made it terrible. I was never a fan of Leaf Cassidy at all. I thought he was a nerd all. And like, Jim Ross would always try to hype these guys on commentary, like, oh, it's a great wrestler. He can do this and that. I'm like, man, it's Leaf Cassidy. Get the hell out of here. Like,
his name is
literally
Leaf
does not
Cassidy.
Matter.
His name is Leaf Cassidy, and he's wearing the Rockers gear.
Yeah.
What? He didn't even have his own gear.
Like, they're going to split the Rockers, I guess. So this was a month after Survivor Series. We covered that. Marty Jannetty blew out his knee or went into it with like a bad leg or bad ankle or something. So Cassidy was on his own by this point. So why not just give him like different gear at least? You know, did they expect Marty Jannetty to come right back and then you're going to do the new Rockers again? Like, what? How have you not moved on from that at this point? It's December 15th, you know, 1996. So yeah, Leaf Cassidy was never anything for me until he went to ECW as Al Snow and brought in Head and all that and did that character. That's when I was like, oh, this guy rules.
Yeah. Like I said, you just change the name, change the gimmick. All of a sudden, this is a good match. But Leaf Cassidy and Flash Funk were Flash Funk dancing his way to the ring and Vince going, I know, that's right. Man. Again, the match wasn't bad. We had Leaf Cassidy hitting a belly-to-belly suplex on Funk over the top rope and outside of the ring.
Yep.
That made Vince yell, what a maneuver, which, you know, that's what you're looking for, I guess, back in 1996. Then Cassidy hit a plancha outside of the ring. It's like, you didn't see planchas and stuff like that in WWF. This was pretty much as good of an opening match you would find in WWF.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, they had some innovative offense. It was almost like, this is like a, you know, WCW style type of match where they open the show with the Cruiserweights. Now, obviously, the Cruiserweights would do a lot more. But for WWF, this was as exciting as it got for the most part. As far as, like, aerial offense, so to speak, for the opening match. I mean, Cassidy, again, hit, like, a variation of the lowdown.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you noticed that.
Yep, did.
Like I said, pretty exciting by WWF standards. And Flash Funk hit a 450 splash for the win. Again, Flash Funk was every bit of like 230.
Yeah.
And hitting 450 splashes from the top rope. It looked like his knee may have connected with Cassidy's face. Not sure about that.
Maybe.
Maybe it was just the boot was so big and floppy, it just hit his face and didn't. It wasn't actually his knee. But Jim Ross wrongly called it a shooting star press.
He did.
Like, come on, Jim. That's not a shooting star. That's a 450 splash, baby. Exactly. Well deserved. Well deserved. At one point, though, in the match, Vince mentioned that Flash Funk looked like Riddick Bowe. I guess because he was getting beat up and whatnot. And Riddick, he said he looked like Riddick Bowe after last night's fight with Galata. And, you know, I had to do my research.
Yes.
That was a world title. I don't know if it was a world title fight or not. But either way, Riddick Bowe faced Andrew Galata the night before on pay-per-view, I would assume. It was the second of two fights they had together against each other in 1996. Both of them ended in disqualification with Riddick Bowe winning.
Hmm.
So that's the second time we've mentioned Riddick Bowe in the podcast, by the way. The first time was when Bobby Heenan brought him up because he, I think in 97 or maybe it was 98 when he tried to join the Marines and only lasted like 21 days. And he's like, nah, I'm out. I quit. I'm out of here. Not doing this Marine stuff. So there is that. Anything else you want to add to that match?
You pretty much said it perfectly. Very different style that we would see in WWF, especially for an opening match. Very WCW-like in the way. And it reminded me of like how much more I liked those opening matches in WCW at this point, because the commentary really put the guys over as well. They didn't need to be like characters. They were, oh, this guy wrestled in Japan or this guy wrestled in Mexico. He held this title, held that title. Like today, you know, being there to explain certain things for these guys that we otherwise wouldn't know. I mean, we didn't have the internet back then. So I was like, wait, this guy, I've never seen him before. And then you have Mike today kind of lend credibility to it. Here, that's the only difference. You know, the match was great, but like, it was two characters kind of going at it, and it didn't matter in the grand scheme of things. For me, I was like, okay, like I knew Flash Funk was Too Cold Scorpio. I had seen him in WCW. I had seen him in ECW. But like, what's he going to do here any differently than I've already seen him? And then Leif Cassidy, to me, was just a dork. Like, I was just so, I didn't even look like
Jim Ross would say.
Yeah, I didn't even like him wrestling. I was just like, oh, Leif Cassidy, really? Like, you know, and look, I was 10 years old, 11 years old. Like, I just wasn't into it. So I appreciated the match more now watching it back than I did back then. A lot of times when I would tape these pay-per-views, I'm like, man, why am I taping this? Like, I'm taping the whole event, but like, geez, I'm taping this? Like, why?
Just from the tape.
Pretty much. But good match. I enjoyed it.
It's a testament to, like, how important being over is. Because the match itself, physically from bell to bell, was a good match. But who the hell cares when neither guy is over? I mean, Flash Funk just got there, so you can't really hold it against him too much. And he was saddled with, but both of them were saddled with bad gimmicks. But Flash Funk was like brand new, and they were trying to push him, trying to make him over.
Yeah,
it just wasn't going to work because it's bad planning. It's a bad plan. Like, you could blame Scorpio for not getting it over. But sometimes, man, it's unsalvageable. You can't just get it over when it's terrible. I don't know.
He was trying. He was going around and be like, it's time to get funky. Like, he was looking right at the camera.
I remember he was doing this thing. But like, what? Come on, bro. So it's important that two people that are over can make a match so much better.
Yeah.
Right? And if Scorpio or Funk, in this case, and Leif Cassidy were over, we'll be talking about this is damn good, but because they weren't, it's just like, I don't care at all. And that's literally it. I don't, like, that's wrestling. Like, we have to make people care for something.
And even,
you know, the moves are great, but I gotta be emotionally invested at some point. And I don't know if anybody was in this match.
I just kind of think back, maybe they could have introduced either a light heavyweight or like the cruiserweight type title. Secondary title, the European title, or whatever before that. I mean, they eventually did a few months later than this, actually, but a match like this for something would have been, I think, a lot more interesting than just an opener on a pay-per-view that obviously nobody cared about Leaf Cassidy. Everyone was still kind of like, who is this Flash Funk guy? Like, the WWF audience might, I don't know how much overlap there was, but WWF's always had kind of a different audience than hardcore wrestling fans 100% of the time. So who knows, you know, what the people in West Palm Beach, Florida were thinking while he was out there. But I just, like, why not give him a, why not introduce a secondary title way, secondary mid-card title way before they did? You know, it would have helped matches like this out.
Yeah, stakes always help matches. So, yeah, something on the at stake. Something on the line that always helps matches. But moving on, we had a quick promo for the 1997 Royal Rumble, which, of course, is the next month. But it wasn't really for the pay-per-view itself. It was actually for the home video release.
Weird.
Which I found kind of odd when that was set to debut on March 11th. So it's kind of odd. It's like, yeah. Hey, we're not even going to show you. We're not even talking about the pay-per-view. We're just talking about the home video.
These certain shows, like, what version of these shows are they uploading to Peacock? Because clearly this had to be, like...
This had to be a home video, right?
Yeah, a home video.
That came out, like, next month. Because in real time, it makes no sense to promote the home video release for a show that hasn't happened yet.
Exactly.
Like, you're going to promote the actual event.
Like, all the highlights were from the 96 Royal Rumble. Okay, it's almost a year ago now, so...
Right. Whatever. Well, I mean, look, you're going to promote a Royal Rumble, you use past Royal Rumble footage, but the home video release is getting the promotion? Like, they must be using, and it makes sense. I mean, WWF may have the Raw files from the pay-per-view itself, but they probably just, especially for older shows, take the home video, upload that to the streaming service. Like, maybe it's easier for the newer shows, but... I'm sure WWE now, they're like, just take this Coliseum video VHS or DVD and throw that onto this thing. Like, people won't care. People won't know that. People like me
come along and like, what the hell, man?
Right.
I know that ain't right.
Right. There's always, all right, you're from 1849 now all of a sudden.
I'm an angry old white guy.
Go on, get me some. Get me the actual pay-per-view copy. Go on, get it. I reckon I don't like this Coliseum video version of this show. Go on and get me that pay-per-view copy. Go on, get. You're not moving fast enough. Go on. So, yeah, that was...
Go on, get it.
That was interesting. Yeah, go on, get. But moving on, it is now time for the WWF World Tag Team titles to be defended. Owen Hart and British Bulldog are defending against quote-unquote Razor Ramon and quote-unquote Diesel, because we're still using the fake Razor and the fake Diesel long after the real ones left. Like, this is, they left in what, like, after WrestleMania? So, talking like April?
Yeah.
We're now in December, bro.
Yeah, but these guys, they didn't debut until September. So, maybe they thought they would, they gave them time to get over. A lot of time.
They should have never debuted. But that's still, like, we're 6 months past, or 8 months past them leaving. Come on. Maybe as a one-time thing, but now they're getting tag title shots. What the hell is going on here? And Jim Ross is like still like incredulous as to why people would boo these guys. He just can't believe that the fans are booing these guys because you're insulting our intelligence on a weekly basis. And maybe that's part of the joke, but it's just dumb. And it makes you look kind of second rate when you're imitating guys who willingly left and they're now thriving in this New World Order on WCW.
Yeah.
And here you are with literally cheap imitations of them. Like, literal cheap imitations. Because I'm sure they paid them much less than what the actual Scott Hall, Kevin Nash were getting paid. Right?
Can you imagine?
WWF standards. cheap imitations of those guys. It just made WWF look bad, in my opinion. It's just a bad look.
Yeah, and I was so pro WWF back then, and I was just like, man, can we stop this? Because it does make me feel stupid watching this and having Jim Ross, you know, like just to have someone counteract Jim Ross wasn't enough on commentary. Like, it didn't make me feel any better about watching what I was watching. I was just, like, Diesel. Glenn Jacobs was what, a final third participant in the damn Royal Rumble? Like, Bret Hart got rid of him, and then Austin, you know, eliminated him to win the Rumble in 97. Like, why are we giving these guys those prominent positions? Diesel wasn't even in that final four match, you know? Like, I guess because he technically was eliminated by someone that wasn't eliminated, but still, like, they were put in these positions where, you know, back then I was just like, man, what are they doing? And even as a kid, I just felt almost embarrassed to watch it. And I think knowing how great the NWO was on the other channel, it's like, man, right? It's even worse.
They out there just riding high, like just killing the game.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? They out there too sweet on camera, and they got the world title, and they're like,
it's almost like they're not even addressing it either. Maybe they did once or twice on TV, but I remember watching, thinking if they would like mention it all in their promos and on Nitro or something, and they never did. So I was like, man, they're so cool because they don't even care about them, those guys. Like, that makes them so much even like so much cooler than I thought they already were. Like, I would get so angry.
They're literally a month away from getting their own pay-per-view. Sold out was in January. Like, and here you are with cheap knockoffs. It just makes WWE look bad. In hindsight, at the time, like, I just don't understand the logic behind it. And like you said, they out here doing their thing, living their best life down in Atlanta. Like, I mean, selling out shows, selling merchandise, like making headlines. I mean, Hulk Hogan's about to go on Leno in a couple months. Like, things is happening. And y'all got Glenn Jacobs and Rick Titan.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? What the hell's going on here? Before the match, Kevin Kelly was backstage. He's with Bulldog and Owen Hart, as they were not quite on the same page because of Steve Austin. Because he was attacking Bulldog, and he was in Bulldog's head. And Owen Hart wanted Bulldog to stay focused on the match, which is, you know, makes sense. At one point in the match, though, we have Triple A's Cibernetico and Pierre Roth come to the ring in Triple A shirts, in their mask, and slacks. That's some mid-90s attire right there, boy. Shirt tucked in.
It is.
To the pants, too. Gotta have the shirt tucked in. But this was, of course, leading up to the Royal Rumble. WWF had established a relationship with AAA and had multiple of their superstars, or the stars. I sound like a WWF employee now. Multiple members of their superstar roster. But multiple AAA guys come up and take part in the Royal Rumble. We live commentated the 1987 Royal Rumble, and you can check that out in our archives. We made fun of, I think it was Mil Máscaras.
Yeah, eliminated himself, yeah.
But the outfit, though, before he eliminated himself, he embarrassed himself with the outfit that was a little shiny and glittery and all that. So go check that out in the archives.
I'll probably actually repost that in January on the lead up. So,
but it was look out for that. Me and the third man, Brian Isley, in the studio, live commentating the Royal Rumble 97. A lot of fun Ahmed Johnson Farouk banter on that show. Talking about how ashy Ahmed Johnson was and how terrible Mil Máscaras looked in his gear on this night. But that's what that was leading to. AAA guys being in the Royal Rumble. The show is in San Antonio. Of course, it's not far from Mexico, so it makes sense. Austin also comes out during the match and he immediately jumps on. Well, Bulldog immediately jumped on Austin as soon as he got out there. However, Bulldog was a legal man in the match and almost got himself counted out, but he did not. He got himself back in the ring. And then officials got Austin away from the ringside area. But at the end of the day, British Bulldog and Owen Hart, they retained by beating quote-unquote Diesel and quote-unquote Razor which clearly pissed off Jim Ross. You could tell in his voice that he was not happy about what was happening in the latter stages of this match. You can tell he was big mad.
You know, nowadays with his AEW, when he's on a commentary, even when he started, even in New Japan, when he would do some of that stuff, a lot of people criticized him for what they felt to be some lackadaisical effort on Jim Ross's part. Here, he was not lackadaisical with his effort at all. He was
not at all.
He was so into what he was doing. It was so believable. I thought so many times, even on Livewire, when he would lay into Vince McMahon, lay into like the WWF as a whole, and I'd be like, why is he here then? Like, why does he hate? He hates the WWF, but he's like here every week. Like, I don't understand. You know, I'm 10, 11 years old. I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm like, dude, just leave then. I don't want, like, I'm watching something. I don't want you to like criticize what I'm watching every week. Like, come on, man.
Meanwhile, he's one of the highest ranked officials or executives. Yeah. In the
company. I had no idea.
Making a ton of cash, but, yeah, I remember at one point, like, that's stupid. Why would you do that? He was so mad. Oh, hell, why'd they lose? Like, God damn it. Like, clearly, he had
that's great.
One of those guys to win.
That is
so
great.
Upset when they lost. So that was
pretty. We need more Jim Ross impersonations from you.
God damn it, Sassafras. Why would you boo these guys? They're good looking. They're just as good as the other guys. They're better looking than the other guys. Who would in their right mind would boo Diesel and Razor? Sassafras. All right.
I love it. I love it.
I always find it funny that he would complain about them getting booed. Like, why would you?
Yeah, do that? Yeah. And it made me laugh. Like, I understand that. And I was like, well, he's the guy that bought him in. So, like, it makes sense to me. Not. As a fan, but he just would get so annoying. I'm like, man, shut up. Like, just deal with it. Why don't you go be their manager then? Like, be another Jim Cornette and get out of the commentary booth. I would get so annoyed at him for, like, so many things. And it's just funny looking back, like, realizing, I guess, I was supposed to, or that was just part of what the hell he was doing. That was his character at that point.
It was all bad. Even if he legitimately got the heat that they were looking for, it was still all bad.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
really bad.
Yeah.
Bad look for WWF mm-hmm. back in 1996. But moving on, Austin attacks the British Bulldog after the match.
Mm-mm.
So that's still a thing. And then we get a glimpse of the Nation of Domination backstage at the AOL chat table, room, whatever. And they got their own people to type. We don't need you. Your white people to type, but we want some brothers typing. They're going to type the right words. Right? And they all there in their suits and bow ties typing away and, you know, chatting with the folks out there on AOL. America Online. Man.
By the way, before that, at the end of that match when Austin attacks Bulldog, did you notice Owen Hart? Like, so perfect. He was so perfect at everything. He, like, sees it happen. He, like, looks over his shoulder, sees Austin, like, chop lock him and kick him or whatever, and then goes and sets down the title belt, sets down the Slammy Award, and then walks over the Bulldog just to make sure, like, he's all right and everything's done. Like, he was, and that's what I remember watching. I was like, wow, Owen's not even trying to attack Austin. Like, I don't think he ever tried to attack him once, you know, Bulldog and Austin had that thing, and then obviously, it was leading to that Bulldog-Owen feud, but then they came back together with Brett. But those were the things I noticed a lot as a kid, and I was like, man, Owen's such a slimy jerk. Like, why didn't he help Bulldog right away? He, like, just goes over to the corner, sets down his tag title belt, sets down his Slammy Award, and then walks back over to the Bulldog. It made me laugh. Like, Owen was so good at that. Just that little thing I noticed, and it just made, like, it literally hammered home the point to me that Owen didn't care about Bulldog. Like, for me, like, okay, Owen's the bad guy here. Obviously, they were having some friction, but it wasn't, like, coming to a head yet. And it came to a head, you know, like, the European title tournament right after that. But, like, this was, like, the stepping stones to that. And everything Owen did, I paid attention to because he was, like, so good at it. I was like, man, what a jerk. And it made me laugh. He just walks over to the corner and puts his stuff down and walks back over. Like, that classic Owen, man.
Yeah, Yeah, it was pretty funny. He's gotta make sure that the slammies are taken care of.
Yeah, I'm not gonna drop this and maybe it gets broken, you know, on the mat. Yeah. Like I gotta set it down first, and then I'll check
on
baby.
He worked hard for those. Damn it!
This is before he had two.
Right.
Was, well, he just had one. The one, he couldn't let anything happen to that one.
Nah. Well, moving on from that, we got Vince McMahon in the ring, and he introduces Ahmed Johnson, who we talked about a couple weeks ago. Not great of a talker. It's not that great of a talker, I should say. But here we are. He's in the middle of the ring with a blue jumpsuit talking with Vince McMahon.
Ahmed, you're counting the days until the Royal Rumble. On January 19, finally, it will happen. The leader of the Nation of Domination, Farooq, will meet Ahmed Johnson.
You know, first of all, this goes beyond anything that you can imagine. I've lost my girlfriend, I've lost my car, I lost my house, I lost everything due to this injury. Only thing I got now is my fans.
What?
That's all I have.
That ain't much.
So that, I promise you, Farooq will feel the pain of my man Johnson through his veins.
What the hell Ahmed just said?
He's a villain!
But he lost his house and his girl?
And of course that leads us to the injured kid.
Due to his injury.
I guess he got hurt. What did he hurt?
This girl was like, oh, your kidney don't work? F off.
As far as Ahmed Johnson go, my life is over a long time ago. That's what he don't understand. My life was over a long time ago. All I live for is these people out here. That's all I live for.
Ew, why?
Sir, you need to seek therapy. That is not healthy.
I would not live for the WWF fans.
Sir, you need to go seek some help.
He's a therapist.
Don't seek a therapist, my brother. It's all right.
It's the one character Vince McMahon never made in WWF.
Shut up!
If it wasn't such a pitiful crowd here tonight, I'd come down there and put my foot right up your butt right now. Whoa. And let me tell you another thing. You come out here preaching about what you want to do, an example you want to set for your people. You're the reason that your people is behind 50 years. Now, not mine. I'm going to form my own race of people. You know, besides a redneck, it's you, the Uncle Toms of this world, that I hate the most. And when I get through with you for it, in front of the largest crowd in the world at Royal Rumble, I'm going to show you and this whole world that when they say promised land, they say for Farooq.
We got a lot to unpack in this promo.
By any means necessary.
Ahmed.
You know what? First of all, you ain't gotta wait till Royal Rumble. You can come down right now.
Come on, Farooq.
But you know what? You're going down. You're going down.
Oh my God. Oh God.
You remember that?
Oh boy. Going down where?
Johnson.
That's McMahon. Ah, man, Johnson.
let's just wrap it up. Play me out, boys. So much to unpack from this.
You're
right?
Going down.
Number one, Ahmed Johnson. He's had a rough couple of weeks.
No, it's
Ahmed Johnson.
I clipped the way Vince said it because Vince. So.
It's just because of his injury, he lost his girlfriend. Like, all right, so he hurt his kidney.
He lost everything, man.
Was he making no more money? And his girl was like, well, I'm leaving your broke ass. Like, that's it?
Wait, Vince, you weren't paying him? You son of a bitch.
Right. Oh, you broke now. He lost his house? Like, wait a minute, bro. Wait a second. How long were you hurt? Did they foreclose on you that fast? Or were you renting? And the landlord was like, oh, you missed a couple payments. You got to go. Like, he got the sheriff on you? He evicted that ass? Like, what happened? How did you lose everything? This is clearly WWF trying to get sympathy on Ahmed, right?
Yeah.
He's lost everything. And the only thing he has left to fight for are the fans. He literally says it. It's all I live for, are these people. What? Who thought that would make Ahmed Johnson cool, like endearing? Like, bro, you need to go get some professional help. What you talking about? All you live for are the people? For the people. Like, what?
Yeah, good luck with that, Ahmed. I ain't living for those people.
I just don't understand why he was in such dire straits. Like, what happened? What happened?
I don't know. I guess, so we're in December. When did Farouk attack him? In July?
I understand he's hurt. I get that much. But, like, that's from a storyline standpoint.
His finances
were not in order at all, apparently. And who is this woman?
He was spending money like Ric Flair.
Right. Like, where would the money go? Damn, she didn't go into that jumpsuit he had on, that sweatsuit. Where did the money go? It didn't go into that sweatsuit, bro.
He invested in Bitcoin a little too early.
Right. We moved no coins.
Bitcoins.
That's it. That's all he said was just coins and just, I'll buy some coins. So that's one thing. I met Johnson and Rush.
I mean, he was saving money.
Because guess what? I don't take my Prozac anymore. And when I get off Prozac, brother, you don't know
what happened. What the hell, man?
He ain't on Prozac no more, so.
I ain't on my Prozac no more.
He ain't paying for that. He ain't paying for that.
Bro, get some help. You have mental health issues. Okay? And look, things are going bad for you, apparently. Go get some help. Also, that woman that left you, you don't need to deal with her anyway.
No,
the money.
Yeah.
As soon as you stop getting paid because you got hurt, she was like, bye, broke ass. Go folks around. Hide your money, y'all. Ahmed Johnson's around. So, funny, this is wild stuff. Then we get, I'm still laughing at this. Then we get Farouk coming out, who says he's going to form his own race of people. What? Because I can't even talk. Because Ahmed Johnson's the reason why people are 50 years behind. And that's probably, after what he said, it's probably true. All you got to live for, these white folks? What's wrong with you, Ahmed Johnson?
That's all you got? Florida? In Florida? No.
Right, they don't care about you, bro.
You're in West Palm Beach, Ahmed. Like, you
got that.
Get a grip.
Then he called Ahmed Johnson the Uncle Tom. God damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lord. So we got that. And then he says he's going to fight in front of the biggest crowd ever at the Royal Rumble. That's not remotely true. Biggest crowd ever in the world. That's what he said. Biggest crowd in the world. Not true. And then Ahmed goes into the weakest, wackest chant ever. The corniest, most WWF chant ever. You're going down. You're going down. What the hell?
Going down.
Who wrote that? Bro, that's trash. That's trash. Vince supposed to be the creative genius. That's trash, bro. All of that was awful.
Uh-huh, I know. That's right.
Awful.
I really wanted to see that match too. I was like, "Damn, Ahmed's gonna kill him!" But because he was the babyface, so I was like, "Oh yeah, he's gonna kill him." Then he wound up joining the Nation like 5 months later. Jeez. Well, maybe not five. Maybe it was more than that, but still, like, thought it was going to be like this blood feud for a year, and then halfway through, it's like, you know what? I can't beat y'all. I'll join you.
This is rough, bro.
This is just 1 year after.
You are achy, breaking heart, wannabe.
Oh, man. December pay-per-views just didn't treat Ahmed Johnson well at all, bro.
What would he have done the next year, the December 97 in your house, D-Generation X? Like, what would he have done?
I shudder to think. But 2 years in a row with awful verbiage, bro. Achy, breaky, punk.
Wannabe fake punk.
What? Did he just say that wrong? Or what? What? This whole thing was a complete cluster. And we got, in the midst of all this, Farouk calling people Uncle Toms. We got my man Ahmed Johnson down bad.
He suffered hard times, daddy.
Hard times, bro. It's rough out here in these streets for Ahmed Johnson. He went from making money and doing things to broke. Like, what?
It's like, man, WWF, they ain't paying you anything? I mean, all things considered, they're not, after this record revenue they're making. But, man, it only took a few months, and then he's down bad.
Where did the money go? Man, you didn't spend it on that damn sweatsuit you was wearing. So where did it go? Like, I don't understand, bro. It's so wild. This promo... super wild. Like, that's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah.
I couldn't even recap it.
He's off his Prozac, so.
I couldn't even recap it properly. I was just laughing my ass off. After watching it and then trying to retell it, still laughing my ass off.
I mean, hey, the chant picked up steam. A lot of people were chanting it, so.
You know what? You're right about that. But my God.
I remember thinking, wow, that's so simple. But if I was in the crowd, I don't know if I would chant. Like, I wasn't a big chanter or cheerer. The only thing I remember cheering for when I went to a 1998 Raw, which was like my only event in years at that time, was when Stone Cold Steve Austin came out. And the crowd chanted Austin, and I was chanting Austin, Austin. That was it.
There you go.
I didn't do anything else. I didn't chant anything else.
Man. That was wild.
But sitting up there in the upper level, be like, you know what? Stone Cold, he's a real one. I'll chant for him. But everything else, I'm just going to sit here and be quiet.
We got to move on. To the video package.
Narrated by the greatest of all time.
And Mark Mero.
Todd Pettengill.
He voiced it, right?
He did. The GOAT.
He talked all about their rivalry, which included, I should say, Triple H helping Mark Mero win the Intercontinental Championship just so he could take it from him. I'm thinking, like, that's very nice, Triple H, to help somebody win a title.
Yeah, he knew who'd Mark Mero beat? Farouk in the finals? So he was like, oh, I can't beat Farouk, so I got to make Mark have it.
I guess. But he knew, I guess he knew he could beat Mark Mero, but it's still nice of him to give him a title. That's pretty nice.
Sure.
But after the video package, we move on to the Intercontinental Championship match. We have Hunter Hearst Helmsley defending against Mark Mero. In the beginning of this match, they were nose to nose. And Jim Ross had a hell of a quip about them being nose to nose.
They're nose to nose. That gives Helmsley the advantage.
I'll say.
All good men have prominent proboscises.
I see.
Wow. I'll say. Jim Ross, man. Straight savage some of these.
I'll tell you, man. And it was just so random. It was like not even a change in tone. It was just like part of the analysis he had. You know, it was like straight down the middle, but like, you know, what gives, who gets the advantage for this thing and that thing? Well, Helmsley's nose gives him the advantage when they're nose to nose. And to me, I'd be like, I don't know. Like, you know, if you know, they're nose to nose, wouldn't Hunter be further away from Mark? And therefore, Mark would be able to see better. I don't know.
Look, you're applying way too much logic into this.
I don't know if I agree with JR on that note.
That's the joke. Triple A's got a big nose. He got big old snobs.
Ah.
That's it.
And he had another one. He had another one as well.
What a pompous entrance. Are you guys neighbors in Greenwich? Are you and Helmsley neighbors in Greenwich? A lot of you rich folks live there out here.
I think it would take a pompous person to even know the meaning of the word pompous.
Pompicity.
Yeah.
I know that's right.
Oh, and that's God. That's why I clipped it, because I was like, why did Jim Ross say, I know that's right? Like, what is going on here in the WWF in 1996? I know that's right. Like, what are we doing here?
They didn't know. They're just making it up as they went along. Anytime somebody says pompicity on the air.
The only thing JR knew was Razor and Diesel were legit.
They were just winging it out there.
They were.
At certain points. Mark Merrow and Helmsley, I should say. Mm. I thought they were having a damn good match.
And then Goldust shows up.
Goldust shows up and knocks the hell out of both of them with the title belt. I was like, well, I guess that match was fine until Goldust messed it all up. He didn't give a damn about the quality of the match. but he meant to hit Helmsley in the beginning. Helmsley ducks. He hits Merrow, but then he turns right around and hits Helmsley. So there you go. Merrow gets back into the ring beating the 10 count, but guess who doesn't? The champion, Helmsley. He does not beat the count. He is counted out. He loses. However, because you can't lose a title on count out or disqualification, he retains the Intercontinental Championship. Merrow, after the match, puts Helmsley back into the ring and then hit him with an actual shooting star press. With a real one.
The wild thing.
Right. Mark Merrow then took the belt and said, peace, I'm out, and left. And so that happened. And then Helmsley, you know, he's already been beat up. He's been hit in the face with a title belt. He got hit with a shooting star press. He had a grueling match before that. And as he's trying to leave, he's trying to recover and lick his wounds, Goldust comes back out and beats his ass again.
Just for good measure.
Goldust really had it out for Helmsley.
He did. At this point. He did.
Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, there was a few things I made note of. Mark Merrow had a hell of a fireworks display. And it was one of the few that had those fireworks. They were like those rotating circles and whatnot. And I was like, wow.
Like spinny things, yeah. Spinny circles.
I was like, whoa. Is that
supposed to be wild?
Okay. I don't know. Okay, Mark. Okay. Jerry Lawler saying he's going to go one-on-one with Sable tomorrow night on Raw. And Vince McMahon has to make sure we know that's in the Karate Fighters Championship. So.
Karate Fighters only.
Yeah.
Okay, just to be sure. All right.
Earl Hebner, the referee here. Again, I know I don't understand why, you know, if the heel is cheating, why don't they all just disqualify him? Why is Earl physically getting involved and kicking Triple H's arm off the ropes during the abdominal stretch he was doing, and then shoving Triple H. Fans loved it, but
that spot though, he loves that shove the referee and the referee shoves him back spot.
Yeah,
like he's done it. It's a flair spot.
It is. Like, it is.
But Tommy Young,
do it with somebody else, not Earl Hebner. Screw Earl Hebner. Do it with somebody else.
Flair would shove Tommy Young. Tommy Young would shove him back, and the crowd would pop.
So that, of course, Earl annoys me to no end. And then I noticed a terrible editing spot, and I don't remember if I have this particular In Your House on tape in, you know, my collection, but there was a Hurricanrana, like a fine looking Hurricanrana off the top rope that Mark Merrow did on Triple H. But then the next camera cut, they're on the opposite side of the ring, and Mark Merrow goes up again to the top rope, and I guess that's when he's trying to set up for the wild thing, and that's when Triple H shoves the ref into the ropes. So I don't know, like, why they edited that or what the reasoning behind that was, what happened, but it was just so weird to see, like, the Hurricanrana, fine-looking Hurricanrana off the top rope by the ring post closest to the entrance. And then the next camera cut, they're on the opposite side near, like, the commentator's table. Like, I just didn't understand. I want to know what happened, damn it. Why did they edit it? I want to know what happened. But that's all. That's all I got.
Go and get that pay-per-view copy. Go and get it.
That's it. That's it.
I reckon I don't like this home video release. I don't like it. Go and get that pay-per-view copy. Go and get it. Go on now. Go on. You keep saying it. As his voice gets higher and higher.
Go on.
Go on. Go on. Go on. Keep going. You got to move faster. Go on, get it. Go on. I said, go on.
Did I stutter?
I do declare I want that pay-per-view copy. Now go on, get it. This is your fault. You've been sound like a gold rusher from 1849. Like,
would you rather do that or?
It's time.
But just this person sounds like they're in Red Dead Redemption. And they got like a ranch, and they know, I forget the main character's name, Arthur or something, but either way, go and get.
You're listening to The Straight Shooters, featuring Vaughn Johnson and Nick Piccone, giving you the best and worst in the world of professional wrestling, past and present. The Straight Shooters podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Spreaker, Player FM, and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. You can become a patron of The Straight Shooters for only $2 per month by signing up at patreon.com/shootersradio. You'll get exclusive content never before heard from two of the best. You can also listen to classic episodes of The Straight Shooters at shootersradio.com.
Moving on, we are backstage with Doc Hendricks and Psycho Sid, the World Wrestling Federation champion. We go to a video clip where Shawn Michaels had attacked Sid outside of the arena earlier in the show. Brett came out to join in the fray. He wanted to beat up Shawn Michaels. But Sid attacked Bret Hart when he turned his back. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is where I have the clip starting. I believe it's, I guess what, they aired it on Superstars?
Yeah.
And I have the clip.
Advantage of that opportunity, as we can see right here. Here it comes. Bow!
Just like that, Doxy. If you have a bow now.
I love Sid, man.
Something horrible will happen. See, don't put your nose in my business. And if you can't believe that, ask Jose.
All right, Sid, but Jose aside tonight. You can squelch the critics. You
Jose
can
Lothario.
Silence everybody by defeating the legend Bret the Hitman Hart.
Let me do something real simple, even with you.
I love this. Dude, Sid's giving us a lesson.
Oh my God.
We'll play connect
Sid
the
math.
Dots.
Connect the dots.
Out, Bret. Sean beat you. Sean beat you. And I beat Sean like a dog. So how easy will it be for me? Because I'm a master, and I'm a ruler of the world.
The transitive property works. That's what Sid did. He did the transitive property.
He did.
If Shawn Michaels beat you, Brett, and I killed Shawn Michaels, what did that want to do to you? This is Sid. This is simple Sid math. All right.
People think Sid's not smart.
Right. It's not this new math nonsense that they teaching the kids these days. It's new math stuff. No, this is simple. This is Sid math. All right. And in Sid math, the transitive property exists. All right. So more from those guys later on in the main event. But now it is time. Oh, it is time.
What?
It's time for an Armageddon rules match.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh my God, the end of the world.
I know that's right.
This match. So you're probably wondering, what in the hell is an Armageddon rules match? Because that sounds really stupid. Armageddon rules? What? It is apparently.
I liked it.
No rules, no disqualifications, no holds barred. But if anyone is pinned or submitted, they have to answer a 10 count. So it's like a last man standing match in a street fight in one. Mm-hmm. Or what I like to call stupid.
It's the same match Randy Savage and Crush had at WrestleMania 10.
And that was also stupid.
That was not Armageddon rules, though.
Oh my God, you're right. It's like they were trying to find a new match for Undertaker.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we've done the casket match, done that a multiple times. Yoko and Mabel. We can't keep doing the casket match. So what's a new one for Undertaker?
They just introduced Buried Alive, and they're like, oh, we can't use that. Just use it in October.
Just use that. You're right. I forgot about Buried Alive. So we just used that. So what's a different match we can use for the Undertaker? I got it. He's the Undertaker. He kind of believes in death, everybody believes in death, but like he's dead already, according to the story. But the end of the world, Armageddon rules. How about it? And they came up with this fangled match. They figured it out by next year with the Hell in the Cell. They got that right. Right? But this is not good. This was not good.
Yeah. Not really to say.
Despite the fact, though, that the Executioner has attacked the Undertaker on multiple occasions, including that Buried Alive match and that Survivor Series, which we, did a deep dive on a couple weeks back, he doesn't even get an entrance.
I didn't realize that. Did they even show him in the ring before the Undertaker entered? Because
he was standing outside the ring, and I think the camera first panned.
Oh, okay, because I did not notice that. And when I started typing notes for this match, I said Undertaker gets the first entrance with like a question mark.
Right, I was thinking that too, and then it's like, oh, well, that's why. Because the hooded jobber is already out there. The masked jobber, I should say. Either way, Undertaker gets to the ring. He still has a teardrop on his eye. But now it looks like he has makeup on like his face, on like his forehead, to make his brow more furrowed. I don't know if you noticed that.
Not particularly, but
there's no way his eyebrows were actually that furrowed. It's very distinct.
I'm sure they weren't. Yeah.
So it looks like he has some makeup there. But this pretty much Undertaker's whooping all kinds of ass, pretty much. Right? He's about to slam the Executioner on a concrete floor. He had pulled up the mats. Mm-hmm. He's about to slam him back first on a concrete floor. But that was supposed to be interrupted by Mankind. And Mankind comes running out, hauling ass, right? Speeds around this corner. And just when he's about to hit the Undertaker, he eats it right there.
That's a wrestling image that precedes unfortunate events for Mankind.
Yeah. He fell right on his face.
Did he not see that? Like, I know it was in the corner, and it was probably tough for him to see while he was rounding it, but, I mean, didn't he know it would be, like, the mat would be rolled up?
Maybe he didn't think it would be that far back. Like, pretty much as soon as he turned the corner, he tripped over the mats and fell flat on his face.
He did, right on the concrete. Like, he face planted, man. Like,
right.
Wow.
Right on, flat on his ass on that concrete, right beside the Undertaker. Undertaker looked down like, what the hell? Like, and Mankind tries to salvage it.
He's like, is this a fan? Like, what?
Right. He tries to salvage it by, like, attacking Undertaker's legs and stuff like that. Yeah. But by that point, it was too late. I was already dying laughing. It was just so out of nowhere. It's like, he comes running down really fast. It's too, like, he was moving.
It's like, wait, then, why wasn't he out here before? Because it's not illegal. So why did he wait to come out? Like, what was he doing? Was he in catering or something? Like, he couldn't come out with the executioner, and, like, I don't know.
Who knows? Either way, he fell flat on his face trying to get to the ring. Or get the Undertaker, I should say. The Undertaker is taking on both guys now, all over the arena. And then he throws Mankind through the In Your House set. Yeah. And then knocked him through the door as well.
He did.
And I was like, man, did they, like, stop using? I wonder what if they stopped using the In Your House set after this. Because, like, you know, WWF, if they are changing sets, they typically destroy the first one or the last one or the previous one, I should say. And they kind of didn't. I mean, the next month or the Royal Rumble, they didn't use it. But, like, early 97.
They didn't use it in February, but they did use it in May, like the Cold Day in Hell. And I'm pretty sure they used it Revenge of the Takers.
I don't know. So they use a variation of it at Cold Day in Hell.
Yeah, with the
but
ramp.
But they used the whole thing at Revenge of the Taker.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was kind of odd. But, yeah, they destroy the In Your House set.
Yeah, I was angry at that. It's like, come on, man.
The security people come out and try to get Mankind. They mace Mankind. That's what happened. What the hell? So people come out and just mace Mankind. Straight in the eyes, and then put him in a straight jacket. Never really seen that one before.
No.
The Undertaker and the Executioner are fighting backstage, with the Executioner looking for the nearest exit. He was like, get this, I'm out.
He's like, I already got paid. That's it.
Right. Meanwhile, Gorilla Monsoon is instructing security to get rid of Mankind. I guess it was his idea to use the mace and the straight jacket. It's kind of wild. The Undertaker... It's all wild stuff. We're back outside, though. The Undertaker knocks the Executioner into, like, a moat that's outside of the arena. So all hell is breaking loose. The Executioner gets knocked into a moat. Undertaker comes back into the arena. He finds Mankind in the straitjacket. Doesn't matter. Mankind is trying to fight the Undertaker anyway. Undertaker beats him up. But then the Executioner comes back into the arena. Now he's all soaking wet. He took a swim, courtesy of the Undertaker. But that doesn't matter. Undertaker hits him with a tombstone to get the pin, but not the win, see? Because there's still a 10 count. But Executioner did not get up for the 10 count. And Undertaker won a very, very bizarre match. The first and only Armageddon rules match. What a wild ride this was.
Yeah, I thought it was funny before Mankind came out to interfere and trip. Paul Bearer hit the Undertaker from behind with the urn to no effect. So did the Undertaker all of a sudden, you know, SummerSlam 96, he was laid out for, you know, a month, 2 months after Paul Bearer hit him with the urn. So now it doesn't affect him. I was like, that's weird. Why didn't he just hit him with something else? That way... I don't know. The continuity was lost on me at that point. And then when you said the executioner trying to find a way out, you see, like, all those fans running outside trying to, like, see the action. I don't understand that, man. Like, even watching the old shows growing up, when as soon as somebody pins somebody, like jobber matches or whatever, fans rush to the guardrail just so they could touch their hands or whatever, like, I always thought that was stupid and weird as hell. And this made me think back to that where, you know, they were going outside. The cameraman didn't even go up the steps. He was down by the steps. And you just see the fans start. One fan's like carrying a sign outside to see the Undertaker and the Executioner. It's like, man, like, why? Why even? Why? Who cares? Who cares? I mean, why do you care that much?
they came to see some fights, and like, well, they fighting outside. Let's see it. I'm like,
well, this is Armageddon rules, man.
Let them fight.
I still don't get it. It's always weird to me. I remember being like so weird when, you know, I would be at a show with, you know, my babysitter's family, and they would rush to the guardrail. It was like a house show. They would rush to the guardrail after a match. It's like, man, I'm not doing that. Like, nah, that's that looks stupid to me. Like, why am I rushing the guardrail just to get one of them to touch my hand? The only time I did that was when I was already in the front row, so I didn't have to like rush the guardrail. Like when Rick Steiner was coming out and touching the fans' hands, and then he deliberately missed mine.
Damn
you, Rick Steiner. I still remember that. But
oh no, Bron Breakker. Tell your pappy that we're not happy about this.
Telling you.
I just rhymed that. Tell your pappy we ain't happy. Bron Breakker.
Like, what the hell? Damn, I looked at my hand like, do I have cooties or whatever? Like, what the hell's going on? And I was like, I asked my sister, I was like, did he touch you? She was like, yeah. And I'm like, what the hell, man? This is bullshit.
Yeah. Damn right he did.
And then, like, Scott was, like, behind him a little bit. And I was like, Scott, come over here. Don't, and he was just ignoring me.
My hand.
It's like, damn you, Scott. What the hell?
I'm sorry that happened to you, bro.
Yeah, man. This is 20 plus years later. Almost 30 years. Because I think it happened in 93. It was, you know, their run with the WWF as a tag team. So, Yokozuna and Undertaker headlined that house show. So, but that's what I remember the most. That's what I remember the most.
I affected by this greatly. And I'm sorry about that, bro. Sorry that happened to you.
That's
also sorry I watched this damn Armageddon rules match.
Listen, if Rick Steiner was in there, it probably would have been better, but still should have touched my hand when I put it out. It's like the one time where I'm like, okay, I'll put my hand out, and I don't get it. It's like,
he's like, psych!
Whatever. They killed psych! I remember Scott Steiner hit the Frankensteiner on Bo or Blake Beverly, and he was holding his neck when he was like coming to the back, and I was kind of like, they came obviously after the Steiners, and I'm like, man, I kind of feel bad for them because Rick Steiner was a jerk to me. So I was like, am I a Beverly, Beverly Brothers fan now?
Wow. Going to the dark side for the Beverly Brothers.
Seriously.
Moving on from the Beverly Brothers, we're backstage again with Doc Hendricks, who's interviewing Bret Hart.
It is crazy here in West Palm Beach, but Brett, now it's time. And I've got to tell you, always admire you like all your fans because of your collectiveness, your calmness. You're always cool in a very, very volatile situation. Except this morning on Sunday Morning Superstars, I'd like to take you back right now as I was interviewing Psycho Sid. Shawn Michaels.
Take you back to when you got your ass beat.
Sid from behind, and here you came to jump into the fracas as well. And there you can see.
And here you came, minding somebody else's business, and getting your ass beat. It cost you nothing to mind your business, Brett.
Able to defend the title and ruin it for you tonight. Let me put it this way: I wouldn't put anything past Shawn Michaels. He's trying so hard to rain on my parade. This is a guy I've had it up to here. Now, what about this right here, Brett? I hate to interrupt, but there you made a bad mistake.
This is what he got your ass beat right here.
You're back on anybody. As far as I'm concerned, the only thing I'm going to worry about anymore is me.
Here it is. Look, that's you. Get your ass whooped.
Sid's about to whoop your ass.
And all I thought,
what's your response?
Shawn Michaels. Well, Shawn Michaels,
how'd that
you
feel?
Don't matter anymore. 6 foot.
Ooh, that hurt.
Psycho Sid, he's the big man. He is the man. But as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't really hurt. Well, wait a minute. Wait. I think we got to go back to ringside. Shawn Michaels is coming to the ring and playing his music. It's my time. It's my interview. And everybody else comes in with Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels, I am sick to death. Shawn Michaels.
Oh my God.
As far as I'm concerned, after I win the World Wrestling Federation Championship belt, I look forward to it.
Listen to Vince McMahon. He's so happy that Shawn's coming out.
Ringside, better be careful. Ladies and gentlemen, there he is. Former World Wrestling Federation Champion in his own right.
In his own right.
Charismatic,
Vince loves Shawn Michaels, man.
He's charismatic, flamboyant, all around fantastic.
It's certainly very refreshing, and I'm sure he's going to be very candid out here at King. I suggest you mind your manners now.
And he was candid. Bro. And we got some of that goodness as well.
That promo with Doc Hendricks. Look, here it is. I hate to cut you off, but here you go. You're getting your ass whooped.
You still feel this, right?
You see how he punched you in the face right there? Is your eye okay? But my question to you is, did you or did you not get your ass whooped out there? Why did you go out there to get your ass whooped? Like, were you intending on it? Were you planning on getting your ass beat? Was that part of the plan? Was it part of the plan to get sucker punched like that? But yeah, Brett was big mad about that, though.
He was
big mad about. Sorry to cut you off again. After we were talking about you getting your ass beat, now let's go to somebody who's upstaging you, Shawn Michaels.
Here he is. Vince is going in overdrive.
Charismatic. Stupendous. Wonderful. No, not better than Paul Orndorff.
A World Wrestling Federation champion in his own right. Like, wait, what?
He's more magnificent than Morocco. More wonderful than Orndorff. He's Shawn Michaels. Rest in peace to Paul Orndorff. But more, yes. Shawn Michaels. My God. What a
over
wild time.
The top.
What a wild time this was. But it's now time. Not it's time. It's now time for the main event of the evening. WWF Championship on the line. Psycho Sid defending his newly won WWF Championship against Bret the Hitman Hart. At this point, three times your world champion, but looking for a fourth against Psycho Sid. But before we get to the actual match itself, we got to get to the entrance of Bret Hart, in which Shawn Michaels was throwing all the shots at Bret while he was on commentary. Because, you know, he made his entrance to join commentary. And that's why he was on commentary. He was just laying it. He was just laying it on thick about how much he didn't like people, including Bret Hart. And then called Sid. I don't know if you have this clipped off or not.
Yeah. I think so. We'll see.
Well, there is McMahon.
Trashing people.
Who is self-proclaimed role model of the World Wrestling Federation. The man who has decided he is the one by which all the rest of us shall be.
You have
this is like a couple of minutes later.
I do my best to be obnoxious, but I can't even hang with the Hitman anymore. He outdoes everybody as far as being pompous and arrogant. As far as I'm concerned, his time off turned him into nothing but a bitter, bitter shirt.
Damn.
Laid into him.
Shawn speak from the heart, too. You know that was
he
like...
Was. He was. He had that inflection in his voice where right. He wasn't doing the Vince McMahon, what a maneuver. He was like, this is my how I really feel, damn it.
Right. He's speaking from the heart and the soul on that. Then not only did he trash Bret, he also trashed Sid. Do you have that clipped off?
I don't think so, but...
All right. Well, I'll explain it because he just...
I might have missed this. Sid.
So Sid's making his entrance. And he calls Sid the most the company's most expensive luggage ever because he gets carried by every he gets carried everywhere by other wrestlers.
I didn't clip that, but I wrote that. Yeah, yep.
It's like, bro, this is not. We're not talking about big and tough. Why are you talking about him getting carried everywhere, bro? People don't know about that.
He kicked your ass, Sean. He kicked your ass a month ago.
Hey, who cares if he got carried somewhere? But that's Sean. Called him the company's most expensive piece of luggage. Mm. Good Lord.
Yeah.
That's the champion, by the way. Like you said, who just beat you.
That was your old bodyguard, man. That was your old friend. Like, man, come on,
but
man.
Even, just from a... A wrestling standpoint, like, why would you trash the guy who just beat you for the title?
I guess if he was trying to be heelish, Bret. But I understood like the three didn't like each other, but right. The most expensive piece of luggage. Like I didn't know what he was trying to say there until obviously I was older. But
right, man, don't say that.
What the hell,
because that's an insider stuff.
Yeah, maybe like okay, kick my ass once, but he won't be able to do it again type thing. And go after him right. That way. But damn,
most of the fans in '96 especially didn't know what the hell he was talking about. So why would you call him like? Why would it matter that people carried him? He carried you when he powerbombed your ass in the garden a month ago. That's what I saw.
And everyone loved it. They cheered his ass when they pinned you.
You can't pick him up. How can you carry him? You know, that's what most people were thinking. Now, obviously, like I said, in hindsight, we know exactly what he's talking about. But at the time, it just didn't make any sense to trash it like that. It didn't make any sense. So, but even still, damn. Those were some fighting words, bro. Either way, we get to the match. Hart jumps Sid from behind like Sid did to him earlier. Mm. Bret Hart works on Sid's back and even exposed one of the turnbuckle pads. So you see Bret's, you know, kind of heel side coming out here. Then Steve Austin comes out again. This time he attacks Bret Hart from behind. Bulldog comes out to make the save. So that's done. But at one point, late in the match, Bret Michaels, not Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels, but the former host of Rock of Love, Bret Michaels, the guy who was a Scorpion, the band, either or Whitesnake, either one, doesn't matter. Not Bret Michaels. Bret Hart reached for Shawn Michaels' chair, or Shawn Michaels got up and he's trying to get the chair, but Sid stops him and tosses him back into the ring. Before he got back into the ring himself, he pie-faced Shawn Michaels. Sit your ass down. Talk about I'm getting carried around here like I'm a piece of luggage. Oh, sit your little ass down somewhere. Well, that caused Shawn Michaels to climb onto the apron. Bret Hart is sent into Shawn Michaels by Sid. Michaels goes flying off the apron into the announce area. Bret Hart.
Right into the chair. How about that?
I didn't see that part.
That was a replay. They showed the replay. Like, he fell right into the chair. I was like, oh, snap. I mean, you don't see that in real time, but he went right into the chair. I think that was cool placement.
Because of this collision, though, Bret Hart is dazed. And that allows Sid to pick him up for the powerbomb and pick up the win.
I love JR's call, by the way. This is where he pie faced Shawn. Wait a minute. No problem. Yeah, he
gave it to him. Sit your ass down somewhere. Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels has tied for Shawn Michaels. Oh, good God. Good God. That's a lot.
He beats Shawn and Bret back to back months.
That's fair.
Oh no. Shawn. Are you okay?
My favorite part of this is coming after the match. Rules it. He's the king of the world. King of the universe, whatever one it is. Ruler of everything he saw.
I have one. Bret attacks Shawn too. Can I
nice.
To this?
That's my favorite part of the whole thing.
His bloody nose.
Don't do that!
I love how the voice is changed.
Come on, Bret!
Bret tuned his ass up real quick.
He did.
Bret Hart exasperated. Bret got him together.
This is why I thought Bret was the heel to begin with.
No, get him together, Bret. Get his ass together, poor Sean. No, get his ass together, right?
This is why I thought they were going full heel with Brett, but apparently that wasn't like 100%. They might have done Sean as the heel going into the WrestleMania rematch at this point.
Sean was hating on Brett for too long, and Brett had to get him together. And they got him together, tuned him up real quick. Boop, 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 boop.
He probably heard this.
We're all different individuals. Is that, am I the only one in the WWF that can figure that out? Can we all be different? Is that okay with you guys? Or do we all have to be vanilla and boring like Brett? God forbid you smile once in a while, or you have an emotion here or there. It's called real life, folks. Get to know it.
Brett said, oh, yeah, I'm about to show you this ass.
You got to feel this.
Right. Give you this real life ass with a bap, 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 bap. Mink, 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 mink. Trash Shawn Michaels real quick. Shawn Michaels hit the ground again like, oh, God, what happened?
Bret Hart said.
Oh, my God. No, he did not. No, don't attach Bret Hart's good name to that. The good name. I don't even know Bret's full name, but Bret Cornelius Hart. Don't attach his name to that.
I was going to say something like Garvin. Like, I could see Bret Garvin Hart. I have no idea where Garvin came from.
His middle name is great. It's Bret Sergeant Hart.
No. This is...
Sergeant.
So his first and middle names initials are BS.
BSH,
that's
baby.
Great.
Bret Sergeant Hart. That's worse than Cornelius somehow. Or Ezekiel.
I don't think either of us would have guessed Sergeant.
I didn't expect Bret Hart's middle name to be a military rank. So yeah, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect did he name his kids like Brett, Commander? Or what's Owen's middle name? Look up somebody else's middle name.
That's a good one.
What if they all got like military rank? No, his middle name is just James. James. It was a nice normal middle name.
Pretty much.
Well, the late great Owen Hart. But Brett got Sergeant.
OJ. OJ and BS.
Hey, man. But that is how we wrap up. In your house, it's time! From 1996.
It's time!
It's not Vader time, though. It's time.
Just it's time, right. Yeah. Not Vader time. Just time. Time to wrap it up here. But before that, I want to get your final thoughts on this show.
I know, it was funny seeing after Bret Hart beat Sean's ass and Sean leaving the ringside area, and he gets on the commentator, he gets on the headset. We don't hear all of it, but we hear him say, "You're a punk, and somewhere down the line, I'm going to kick your teeth down your throat," to Bret Hart. And as he leaves the ringside area, he gets in the face of some fan who's doing, getting in his face, doing like, woo! It's like, I guess he's trying to do Ric Flair or something. Is that the only thing that makes sense? But that made me laugh. And by the way, Shawn Michaels was not done for the night. They had three. So this is what I used to get confused with the 2-hour pay-per-views before I realized, they actually have like a full card, basically, but they only air 2 hours on pay-per-view. You had three more matches after the pay-per-view went off the air. Shawn Michaels beat Mankind in 6 minutes and 55 seconds. So how about that? Stone Cold Steve Austin beat Goldust, and Brakus beat Dr. X. So that was interesting to me. We don't really talk about stuff that isn't aired on the actual pay-per-views. So I thought that was interesting to note. And also, in the free-for-all, Rocky Maivia defeated Salvatore Sincere, who was managed by Jim Cornette, who I totally forget this era when it came to this, but Jim Cornette apparently was trying to court Rocky, and when Rocky denied him, Jim Cornette got everyone, like he was managing everyone to try and beat Rocky. I don't remember that, but that's hilarious to me. Jim Cornette and the corner of Salvatore Sincere. Like, what? What the hell's going on here? But he apparently was in the corner of a lot of people going against Rocky, so in that time period. So I'm just like, why didn't we get to see it on pay-per-view? Like, that would have been hilarious to me. But
no, we got to see Leaf Cassidy.
Yeah, I mean,
Flash.
Like, yeah, I mean, it could have taken the place of the Armageddon Rules match. I would have been cool exactly. with that. But
come on, and we gotta get Leaf and you gotta get Cassidy and Funk. Come on.
But so. Also, this main event, Bret Hart kind of beat Sid up quite a bit. So I was like, thinking
about
it. He worked
the back a lot.
Yeah.
Worked the back a lot in this match.
I don't remember Sean getting as much offense in at Survivor Ooh. Series. So,
maybe like, by the transitive property, right? Bret is better than Sean.
Yeah. And I wonder if, you know.
Gotta use that Sid math.
Yeah. Bruce Pritchard had, you know, talked about this event and even Survivor Series recently. And talked about the tension between Bret and Shawn wasn't like really real life until obviously later in 97, but they were apparently working together to try to really create some heat. I could see Bret kind of like wanting more offense on Sid and then Shawn being like, what the hell, dude? Like, he kicked my ass at Survivor Series. Like, why why do you look so good against him and I didn't? But it was all, I guess, part of the story. Shawn was going to regain the title at Royal Rumble anyway and all that. So it's a very interesting time period in real life to follow what was going on in the WWF. Not so much on the screen. There were a few good things on the screen, but that's what I took away from this match. I was like, obviously Bret Hart just coming back, like probably don't want him to get his ass kicked by Sid, but he got a lot more offense than I was expecting because I haven't watched this match in 20 so years. So a lot more offense than I thought he would. And I just thought that was interesting.
And it's funny because this time period kind of changed the course of wrestling history. When you think about Shawn is going to get the title back, and they're clearly building towards Shawn and Bret in a rematch at WrestleMania. And I think Bret was going to win that. But Shawn gets hurt, which some people, you know, believe he was either faking it or embellishing it. Mm-hmm. So he didn't have to lose the title. He could just drop it. You know, willingly, not like losing a match. But and he didn't want to drop it to Bret, I would assume, because that's probably what would have happened at WrestleMania. So Shawn goes away. He's hurt. But now where does that leave Bret? And Bret goes against Steve Austin in a rematch from Survivor Series, and they turn in a classic, which makes Steve Austin only catapults him, you know, further up the stratosphere than where he was at that going into that match. So if none of that had happened, Steve Austin might not be the star we know him as. Maybe he still would have gotten there because Steve Austin was an undeniable talent. But out of it, out of the little bit of a mess that we got with the Shawn Michaels Bret Hart match that never was at WrestleMania, we got an instant classic and we got somebody get catapulted to the top, pretty much the top of the card, and Steve Austin after their submission match at WrestleMania. So, very interesting times. 96 and 97, there could be a book written about all the different machinations about what the hell is going on between Shawn Michaels, when Shawn Michaels became champion, and how he was acting, and then going to the Bret Hart stuff and their beef, but then out of that comes Steve Austin. And then you go to Steve Austin being a top guy, but then out of that comes The Rock and Triple H. Like, it's so much stuff that's going on. And then Shawn Michaels retires, Bret Hart leaves, obviously, and you know, all hell breaks. You know, it's wide open after that with Steve Austin as a top guy and so many others. So, very interesting times in WWF. But it's time to wrap it up here for episode 311. Nick, take us out with some plugs, please.
You can follow me at _Picone on Twitter. You can follow Vaughn at Vaughn M. Johnson on Twitter. And follow us at Shooters Radio on Twitter. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Shooters Radio. You can also find us on Patreon, patreon.com/Shooters Radio, to request any deep dive you would like, and we will fulfill it. So until next time, for Vaughn Johnson, this is Nick Picone. We'll catch you again next week.